the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Now we move on to the last word on the environment. Sive O'Neill, environmental and climate change researcher and contributor to the Irish Times, is with us. Sive, good afternoon or good evening to you.
Hiya, Daniel. How are you?
I'm good. Listen, we have a lot to get through this evening. So let's start in France. The culture wars over air conditioning. This is fascinating to me. And you might bring us through what's the row about?
Well, traditionally, not very many houses in France would have air conditioning. I mean, we think in Ireland that, you know, they have much warmer summers. But in fact, they were quite manageable most of the time in most places for people to be able to cope without air conditioning. But because of the impact of climate change and rising summer temperatures and longer and more intense summer heat waves, many people are, you know, starting to purchase and install air conditioning. But what made it controversial is that Marine Le Pen, the far-right leader in France, has actually declared that she would deploy a major air conditioning equipment plan and wants to install it and make it mandatory in all public places. So she's made it a very political issue. And then you have the leaders of the Green Party and other people on the left in the newspaper Libération saying that the technology was an aberration that must be overcome, and it's basically you know, a thing of the past, because obviously you need energy, electricity to power these extra air conditioning units, and in addition they blow out hot air onto the streets. So they're a kind of a technology that's associated with, you know, fossil fuel consumption rather than actually mitigating climate change. But it's become quite a culture war, and people are weighing in on it, whether it's the right or wrong thing or the right or wrong solution. And the truth is that it just speaks to the urgency of a climate change and the need for climate action. And obviously the health impacts of heat waves are really terribly serious. Heat waves in France have forced the closure of 1,800 schools, and many more people end up in hospital with heat stress, and these conditions are only going to get worse. And that's just with a very modest increase in global temperatures.
And is there no upside to the rollout of air conditioning? I mean, is there a positive development from those on the environmental side, or are they just all negative in terms of that they add to the energy consumption and they just, as you say, spew out hot air and onto pavements, etc.?
Yeah, so basically you need coolants. They're a bit like a fridge, really, in terms of the technology. So there isn't a kind of a quick sort of fix for that. They use electricity. They use quite a lot of electricity, and obviously improvements in efficiency, etc., etc. But even so, if you were to roll out a big program, or if it was a significant increase in the number of houses that had air conditioning units installed, it would make a huge difference to the energy consumption. And you know, there's another thing that happens as well. So in countries where you have extreme heat, like in Pakistan, India, you know, with temperatures north of 40 degrees, that can actually put a stress on the grid if everybody suddenly turns on the air conditioning at the same time. And sometimes that has brought grids down. So there's we are dealing with a systemic problem, which is that temperatures are rising and our buildings are not fit for purpose. And the long-term solution is to retrofit and use natural ventilation systems, and any technological ventilation systems need to be, you know, part of a retrofitting project, really, as opposed to just a kind of a fix that's put on buildings that are not fit for purpose and that are not energy efficient.
Let's move on to the Nordics, because a prolonged temperatures of over 30% have led to significant calls, I suppose, saying that no country is safe. And I suppose you wouldn't necessarily and automatically think of 30 degree heat in the Nordic countries. What's the story here?
Yeah, there's been an extraordinary summer in the Nordic countries, in Norway, Sweden and in Finland. And they obviously have historically cool climates, very kind of long countries. So parts of them are way up in the Arctic Circle. But they've been hit by soaring temperatures in the last month or so, including a run of 22 days above 30 degrees, which is really hard to fathom in countries like Finland. Sweden has endured 10 straight days of tropical nights when temperatures didn't fall below 20 degrees, which is really incredible. And, you know, the effect of that is that they've had hospitals overheating. At least 60 people have drowned, and there's been toxic algal blooms as well in some water bodies. So it's, you know, and one of the things that's really poignant is in the stories about it, there's a lot of reports about reindeers which are seeking refuge from the heat and are hiding in towns and also going into road tunnels seeking cooler air and to get away from the heat, as a result of which they're not grazing. So again, this is just an example of like how animals are affected by the heat waves as well, and obviously it's leading to wildfires and additional hospital admissions, and likely a big uptick in the number of deaths, avoidable deaths that will take place. It's absolutely awful.
And are we seeing any kind of overt government reaction to these, I suppose, hot spells? Or, I mean, or are we still seeing kind of inaction? Or what's the story there? Because obviously when we've seen in more southern countries, you know, governments, you know, have ordered siestas, people take time out during the middle of the day, you know, they try and take remedial action to try and counteract these high temperatures. Are we seeing anything from those Nordic countries?
Well, the Nordic countries are famous for their levels of preparedness and, you know, infrastructure to cope with risk and disasters of all kinds. So I imagine that they do have plans, and that they there are particular types of people that are most at risk. So very young children and older people tend to be most at risk of heat stress. So it would be very important, for example, to have cooling measures in place at hospitals or places where people can seek refuge if their homes are very warm. So the Nordics are really good at that kind of thing. In fact, they've issued all kinds of advisories to their residents, what to do in particularly cold temperatures or hot temperatures or in the event of any natural disaster. So they're pretty well prepared, and it's the rest of us that are not. I mean, obviously we've had lovely temperatures in Ireland this summer. I think personally that's kind of what it feels like, but in fact they are significantly above average for this time of year. That's my understanding. We won't know until, you know, the data has been processed by the by Met Aaron. But you know, so we're looking at the effect of a very small increase in global temperature of like 1.3 degrees, and we're on course for an increase of 2.6. And that is effectively catastrophic levels of global warming, because you're not just talking about a rise in temperature. There's knock-on effects on infrastructure and areas that will heat up much more quickly than others, and the effects on precipitation, storms, and so on. So,
and that's, and, you know, and just to be clear, that's an, that's an increase of 2.6% by 20. By the turn of the next century, essentially, is
that's it? Kind of the trajectory we're on.
Yeah.
But the numbers sound tiny, but it's like, you know, think about your body temperature increasing by that amount, you'd be dead. I mean, that's really where the life systems, the Earth's life support systems are at risk here.
At risk. Moving on to, I suppose, we've seen, like we regularly will see wildfires across the continent of Europe at summer, you know, during the summer, but, you know, fire has affected 440,000 hectares across the Eurozone so far, which is, I think, almost double the average of 2006, according to scientists. I mean, you know, this is, these are becoming more frequent, more dangerous, and more intense year on year, are they not?
They appear to be. But the one thing that's different this year, in my opinion, is the fact that it is receiving much less coverage. And there's much less coverage of the issue connecting it with the kind of failure of the governments of the world to take effective action on climate change. So, you know, if you were just reading the news, you'd be reading all these horror stories about what's happening in Greece and in Spain, firefighters losing their lives, people losing their homes, their pets, their farms. And it's absolutely tragic. But the point is that all the research is showing is that these additional wildfires are related to climate change. So it's not you know, there's a systemic cause behind this, and it's the burning of fossil fuels and the failure to take effective action. But we're just reading about it as one disaster after another.
Well, Sive, you probably won't agree with this texter who says, God, is there nothing that people won't drag into culture wars? You know, which is in relation to our discussion there in terms of France. One of the other topics I wanted to discuss with you was the talks have stalled on the world's first plastic pollution treaty 1 day before the deadline.
Yes. Now, that report actually came out yesterday. Today was supposed to be the deadline, but it looks like they're going to run over till tomorrow. And what's happened here is a three-year-long running row, basically, between major oil producers that are now segueing into plastics and some other countries, including the EU, the UK and Colombia and a lot of other smaller countries. So over 100 countries, in fact, have called for the adoption of a very strong treaty that would limit plastic production and also limit the type of toxic chemicals that are used in making them. And believe it or not, every year, 400 million tons of new plastic, that's on top of all the plastic we have already, is put out on the market every year, 400 million. And that is expected to grow. So these countries, including the EU, are pushing for a cap on plastic production, but they are getting a big pushback from the plastic and oil producing nations like Saudi Arabia, Russia and Iran. And also the US, which behind the scenes has been very supportive of the chemical industry, and they are rejecting production limits and want the treaty to focus on waste management and recycling instead. But there's no agreement. It's been running. This is the second iteration of these negotiations this year. The first round collapsed, and it is possible that these talks will collapse as well. And it's very difficult because, you know, no treaty is a very bad outcome as well. Some improvement is better than no improvement, but what's needed is much more radical action, and it doesn't seem like that will be possible because all these decisions are made in the context of this treaty by consensus, which gives the oil producing states a veto over everything.
And progress in this area, as we know, can be painfully slow. Sive O'Neill, environmental and climate change researcher and contributor to the Irish Times, thank you very much for your time here on The Last Word on the Environment.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.